Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the streaming online cinema. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today to talk about two movies of varying prestige and quality.
That have nothing to do with each other.
Not a damn thing. We have, other than that they were both released last year.
Sure.
We have Michael Snydell.
Hello. This song did really poorly.
And Bill Graham. Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna have to start talking immediately. So I'm gonna rush through all of the housekeeping stuff. To find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, Facebook The Film Stage Show, email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. Find us on iTunes, give us a comment and a rating, and of course, we are brought to you by Mubi, which is a streaming online service unlike any other. Mubi introduces a new film each day, and you have 30 days to watch said film. So you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 great films to watch that are handpicked by Mubi's curators. I realize now that I've been talking about my vacation that's coming up more on this podcast than in my actual personal life. A friend at a party, I said, yeah, you know, our vacation's next week. And he said, what vacation? And I said, what are you talking about? I've been talking about this vacation for months. And then I realized that it's only on this podcast. And
nice.
Only in the context of Mubi, because Mubi allows you to download to your mobile device all of its movies so you can watch them on the go. So when I am in a beach house with, I think I did the math, and it's 12 other members of my family, I don't have to worry about a spotty Wi-Fi connection bogged down by numerous devices. I can watch on the go without a single bit of lag. So that's going to be great. If you would like to try out the wonder that is Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Now, today's episode, let's set it up. We had the Stagies a couple months ago. And one of the questions was, what is a film that we did not talk about this year that you think we should have? One of them was American Honey, which we talked about. The other that won that poll was Boo, a Madea Halloween.
Woo!
Thank you. Someone had to fill in the woo. We have been putting that off until this week, and we didn't choose this for any real reason. We didn't give ourselves an actual deadline when we had to watch it by. We could have done it 3 years from now and still claimed to have carried through on that promise. Now, but we were looking at what was coming out, and we said, I don't want to see Pirates. And so we didn't. And then we were like, we'll just see War Machine that comes out on Netflix, but that movie is apparently terrible. So we said, you know what? We owe the fans Boo, a Madea Halloween.
And we hate ourselves.
But then... Some madman said, that's not going to be enough to talk about. We should also talk about Patterson. And I don't know who first put that idea forward, but there is so much more to talk about in Boo a Madea Halloween than Patterson. Like, what? Patterson, I'm going to, yeah, you know, it's fine with whatever, you know, Adam Driver's good performance and blah, 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 dog. But Boo a Madea Halloween, like, we gotta sit down and just go frame by frame back and to the left through this goddamn movie.
Two episodes at least on Boo.
This podcast is now solely
now
about Boo a Madea Halloween. Because I went down a rabbit hole with this movie. They're making a sequel that's coming out this year. I started looking up the cast. There's a woman in this movie who looks like Iggy Azalea. Her name is Lexi Pantera.
Oh, you looked her up too?
And this is the first line of her IMDb bio. conceived in the back of a 69 Cutlass, born Alexis Leela Afshar, as a baby, Lexi Pantera began utilizing her stunning features and sweet disposition to mastermind and manipulate those around her to get what she wanted. As a baby?
You need to read the next sentence.
Okay. Hence, her nickname, Luthor, was appropriately given to her by her father at the age of two.
What?
I just want an entire episode where we talk about this woman. Daughter of a professional motocross racer and world-class hot rod builder, Tony Pantera. Niece to seven-time world champion drag racer. What is happening?
I will admit, I was like, who the hell is this woman? And I immediately looked her up and I was like, oh, there's a lot of videos of her. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, interesting. And apparently she's in a lot of the Medea films. I didn't realize this.
That's the other thing. There's like, this is like a franchise.
Yeah.
So
of her.
They're referencing shit. And I'm like, did that happen in a movie?
There's a Medea universe.
We've already been talking about it, but like, I just wanted to say, like, guys, I hope you realize that we're going to talk more about Boo. And I feel bad for Patterson, because you guys were like, I don't know if we're going to have enough to talk about. This is a train wreck.
But to be fair, we had, none of us had seen the Boo, whatever the hell this is thing, we had decided that we were going to two-part Patterson and Boo. And then all of a sudden, Michael dropped the line, what is this thing that we just watched? And I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
I literally watched it today. Like, it ended an hour ago. And my mind is still reeling. Like, I'm in it. I don't know what's happening.
There's a good argument that I've been sick this whole weekend. There's a good argument that I got sick the minute I finished this movie.
Here's the trailer. We're going to play the trailer because that's what we do when we review a movie. And so here's the trailer.
Come over here with that damn foolishness. Let something jump up out of this damn box. You got knocked the hell out.
What's up, ladies? We're having a Halloween party tonight, so why don't you come on by?
Tiffany, what's going on?
Chill out, Pops. It's cool.
Hey, Medea.
I would let that play on so that everyone could understand what's happening, but like, I don't think that the trailer is going to help anyone.
No.
Like,
not enough yelling in that trailer.
I just...
El Presidente.
I'm going to give a basic plot summary of this movie. We're going to do this like a real review. You guys better be ready to give your brief thoughts. I'm going to do a basic plot summary, and then we're going to talk about it. Also, I'm going to assume that no one else who's listening to this has ever seen another Medea movie. So I'm just going to go like, this is the first film and only film in the Medea world. Boo Medea Halloween is about a father who cannot control his daughter, who is friends with a like weirdly godly church going girl, and who wants to sneak out to go to a frat house for a Halloween party, even though she's only 17, and the father's got to go on a business trip, and the daughter refuses to go to her mother's house. So he calls. And here's where I start tripping up, because I'm not sure how any of these people are related to each other.
It's her aunt.
It's his aunt, right?
No, it's his mother.
Her aunt.
Tyler Perry's mother, isn't it?
No, it's her aunt. It's definitely, most definitely her aunt.
No, but so Tyler Perry's mother.
Bill, you think that Medea is the daughter's aunt, so that it is the character of Brian's sister?
Jesus, I don't know.
I thought that it was his aunt. And
off to a great start.
Anyway, so this group of four crotchety old people show up, and they're supposed to watch this girl, but they and then hijinks ensue. Michael Snydell, what did you think of Boo, a Madea Halloween?
Yeah, this movie, it feels impossible because it's, you know, it's, I think I've seen a previous Madea movie. I think I've seen Diary of a Mad Black Woman. I know that was a long time ago, but I remember almost nothing about it. But what I can say about this movie is what's so strange about it is that it is one of the most, like, pandering, moralizing, obvious, shtick-heavy, predictable movies I've ever seen. But it's predictable in, like, jokes, but is so insane in where it goes in a narrative that it's kind of like they make it up as they go along. And it's this bizarre mixture of, like, fourth wall breaking absurdism, like graphic violence played as a joke, and like moralizing that, like, is too extreme. So you have Tyler Perry playing three different characters in this movie, like, you know, a la like Nutty Professor or Austin Powers series. Mm-hmm. And he plays this buttoned up dad who's kind of a shithead. And then he plays either his aunt or his mother, or I should say his sister or his mother, and Madea's husband as well. So he is... It's kind of a crazy feat. Like, I almost want to give this movie some credit for the fact that, like, it is literally him playing off three characters at a time. Like, there is something very acrobatic about this movie, in the way that they just, like, riff endlessly. And just, like, so on a filmmaking level, these are scenes that, like... The joke hit rate in this is about one joke that works every 5 minutes. And I say 5 minutes because every single scene is 5 minutes. Like, a stupid gag that should be like three lines is dragged out forever.
You can at times leave this movie running, go smoke a cigarette, come back, and not have missed a goddamn thing. Like, not even plot wise, but joke wise, the same weird joke will still be happening.
Yep.
And not have reached its ultimate resolution.
But so, like, the last thing I want to say is there's a lot of bad comedies I've seen, but I've never seen a bad comedy that is so morally repugnant and wants me to believe that, like, the sweet moment isn't horrifying in every single context. So I look forward to getting into all of the insane nooks and crannies, but this movie seems impossible. Like, it does not seem real. And it feels like one huge lark that's now lasted for going on a decade. Like, I swear to God, guys, I'm almost curious to check out other ones because I need to know whether this is a fluke or whether this is the formula, because there is no rhyme or reason to this thing.
I feel like we're missing essential context, you know, because, like, I don't, like, is this how it used? Because I had an image in my head off of, like, basic things that I've heard about Tyler Perry movies, but now I'm realizing that, like, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor, like, isn't a Madea movie, it's a Tyler Perry movie, though. And, like, his other ones, like, I Think I Love My Wife, I think is one of his, like, those are different than the Madea movies. And I don't,
but Madea shows up in a lot of them, even if it's for just a cameo, I believe,
right? But, like, I don't, like, a Madea centered movie.
So, like, it's excruciating.
I don't know if like Madea Goes to Jail follows this same wacky kind of thing, you know, like Madea's Family Reunion. Like, are those all similar in aspect to Boo?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It started as a play as well, which is an interesting wrinkle.
Yeah, there's a, you can go real deep into like the history of this character, and Tyler Perry is a, an artist. But all we all I have anyway is Boo, a Madea Halloween, and I am so shocked and confused by what it was and is and will continue to be for as long as it exists in this world. Bill Graham,
hi.
What'd you think?
Oh boy. I, you know, this film, what's really interesting about this is how cheap it feels. More than anything, there are a ton of single shots where you can tell that one person is monologuing off camera versus the person that's actually on camera, and they're just reacting to situations. This is kind of the definition of low-budget filmmaking, where they basically are, you know, they don't have actors or actresses of the caliber that can react in position, in camera, to the situation that's unfolding in front of them. So they just keep shooting one person at a time, and they're reacting to the situation, whereas someone off camera is basically voicing what is happening. This happens again and again and again and again in this film. Part of it, yes, has to happen because of the simple fact that Tyler Perry plays both Brian and Madea, and I think Uncle Joe. I can't quite.
Yeah, he's,
okay.
He's Uncle Joe. In fact, okay. One of the things that
and just to clarify,
yeah, go ahead.
Brian is Madea's nephew.
Okay.
That's what I thought. Okay. Also,
that makes
more
sense.
I want to, just while we're on the subject of Uncle Joe, or Joe is his father, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So while we're on the subject of
Joe, it's weird. It's real weird.
His fake old man hands are like spray painted dishwashing gloves.
They are bad. They are real bad.
Yeah. Anyway, please.
Let me look up. Okay. Fine. This movie cost $20 million to make. I'm not sure where they spent $20 million.
Craft food table.
I'm not quite sure because most of it must have been on the makeup, and the makeup's not that good. So
I guess like renting locations and
I guess
Bella
they
Thorne,
did look
I'm sure
like
is
like
pulling down a big project.
Yeah, good old Rain, all 5 minutes of her.
Also, Tyga is in this movie as himself.
Yes.
So like that there's some money. Yes.
For the second time, because he's also in a Dope as himself.
Okay. Sure. Someone's done a little bit more research than me.
I've seen Dope, but I do have to say
Dope?
Yeah. Tyga's in that as himself.
I thought I've seen that.
I'm having trouble remembering who Tyga is in that. I mean, what point he comes
what
in.
What is Dope? Oh, yes, I've
sells
seen
weed, I believe.
Jesus.
No, anyway. I do want to say one thing before we get into this a little bit. Like, as much as this movie's baffling, I do want to say that I have read things from even, you know, respected actors and actresses. Like Taraj P. Henson has a great quote about how Tyler Perry was paying like double what any other Hollywood role was going to give her at a time. So I do have to say that like he does seem like someone who treats these actors really well.
Well, yeah, and I mean,
I don't mean that in a backhanded way at all.
Yeah, no, not only that, but like these movies are like some of the most diverse films that you will see.
Sure.
To the point where I can't even tell you what the ethnicity of half the frat boys in this movie are. And that's not just because their acting style is so wildly like out of balance with what any human would act like that I'm pretty sure most of them are aliens.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, Bill. Good.
Yes. So I didn't quite know what I was going to sit down to. The film feels relatively low budget, which is surprising because this is like the 8th or 10th film in this Madea like series at this point. And I thought rolling into this, it would feel
also, you know, almost 2 hours, Bill.
I didn't even care about the runtime. Honestly, like, look, so earlier this year, I ran into the Fast and the Furious series because, you know, I hadn't caught up to it outside of the first three films. And I was like, okay, what is going on with these films? How have they gained in popularity? Where has the budget gone? How has it gotten more and more expensive? And these films have kind of had a similar track record where they've gotten kind of bigger and bigger and bigger. And yet, at least from the outside, like, I'm not going to say that I've sat here and researched the Madea series and like track their box office and their budget and things like that. But it feels like they have gotten more and more popular. And I, rolling into this film, I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to be like, it's going to feel kind of hammered out and stuff like, and man, this felt like a really low budget film right from the outset. And I was just like, how is this the series that has made all this money, that has 8 episodes or, you know, 10 series in or whatever? And I was really kind of flabbergasted by it. I'm not sure if that was because Brian Tyler Perry's character, who I guess I'm not sure how much he's involved in the series overall, but I would guess Madea is the mainstay and Brian is not quite the central focus of the series overall. And so I guess part of it was because of Brian's involvement in this series that it felt a little bit low budget, because every single time he was on screen, it felt a little hokey and it felt a little weird. While every time it shifted over to Medea's perspective and it focused on her, it felt like it had a rhythm and it felt like it had a kind of flow that I could get into. Every single time Brian was on screen, and he's on screen I would guesstimate about a quarter of the film, somewhere around there. He plays a central role, and he's kind of the setup and the execution, and then he disappears for a large portion of the film. And so all of those kind of sequences felt really kind of broken up by his involvement. And the jokes obviously seem to have a lot of background behind them. Towards the middle of the film, I got a rhythm of where the jokes were landing and how they were landing and how kind of the setup of all the characters were and things like that. Obviously, like we've mentioned before, I guess none of us had seen any of the Madea films prior to this, so we were just kind of flabbergasted by what was going on overall. But it did kind of hit a rhythm towards the middle, and I could appreciate some of the jokes, and I could appreciate some of the humor that it was kind of going for and things like that. That does not mean that it ever escaped the fact that this film just feels very low budget, and it feels like it was put together in such a hackneyed way that I can't imagine that there's a sequel to this. I can't imagine that there's more of this that's possibly being clamored for or things like that. I guess, like, honestly, this is a very poor reflection on Hollywood and our output overall more than anything. And I want to be careful because, look, I am a straight male white dude that is talking about this series in a way that's like, I don't understand why y'all are into this. But the unfortunate reality is there is not a lot of films of this caliber or of this kind of style that are put out, especially in a series like this. The Madea series are everlasting at this point, it seems. No matter how bad Uncle Joe's makeup effects are, it doesn't really seem to matter. These series are continuously popular. They are continuously out there. And it's just a reflection of kind of like Hollywood overall is like, okay, if you're not going to feed this population what they are clamoring for, even at the slightest, this is what they're going to get, and this is what they're going to consume, and this is what they're going to end up like pushing forward overall as a series. And
Bill, there's like no easy parallel. The closest thing I can think of is something like, you know, like the series of films like Kevin Hart has been in like about like Think Like a Man and Think Like a Man 2. Like these are
I haven't even seen any of those. But I guess the one that's really kind of jumped out is High Five. What is that movie? I can't remember. There was one that him and Chris Rock made recently
Top five.
Right?
What I was gonna say is that like hold on with me while I make this jump and offend everyone. It's like the Marvel films, you know.
Sure.
Like yeah, they've hit upon something that works,
a formula,
something that constantly makes money, and something that people are obviously intent to and happy to watch. And thus there's no need to stretch your legs and do anything different or try anything harder or more formally daring.
But like,
you could just do whatever and it works. And it's the same basic conceit. Like this
but
is
Brent,
what
how
is wanted.
How would you even remotely distill this movie down to a formula? This movie, from like scene to scene, as Bill said, feels so haphazard and improvised in the moment.
But I feel like that's what the formula is. Like it's, you can tell that they
I don't know. I honestly don't know either. I really hope not. I really
hope not. Cassavetes.
because like I started clicking on character names, right? To like see what to like on IMDb, you can click on a character name and find every movie that a character's been in. And so I did that, and like some of these movies sound like super intense, and then this one is fucking nuts. And so like you can't really compare this to like Diary of a Mad Black Woman or Madea's Family Reunion, because like I can't imagine that they're similar. But there has to be a point, I guess, in those movies where they just kind of sit the camera down and say, all right, you crazy old people, just like talk shit, curse, and talk about beating your children back in the day.
Let me
in like a PG-13 way. It's so odd.
Yeah. Let me bring something up that we recently talked about, right? And kind of like wrap this kind of in a bow a little bit for my overall thoughts. Okay. So this film in a way reminds me a lot of Alien Covenant in the opposite direction. So Alien Covenant starts with this kind of big idea, right? And it starts with this big philosophical idea with David and Waylon, and they have this big kind of philosophical conversation. And this film starts in a way that is just completely goofy and it's haphazard, and you don't even realize that Brian is even a main central character of this film series and all of his offspring and things like that. And by the middle of the film, it hits on this really kind of touching and like philosophical idea of like raising a child and what it means to kind of have ownership and kind of have control over another human's life and things like that. And it really kind of touches in this way. And then it's like, oh, by the way, we're still a Halloween film, so we're just going to give you a bunch of goofy shit all around it. And that's what this film kind of feels like. It reminds me so much of Alien Covenant, where it starts in a philosophical way and then it just gets crazy and haphazard towards the end. And this film starts in a haphazard way. Towards the middle, it kind of has a point that it's trying to make. And then it's just like, oh, by the way, we're still going to have fun and we're still going to be crazy and crazy. And that's kind of what this film feels like to me, where I was like towards the middle of this film, I was like, wait, hold on. Are we still in the same movie? Why are we? And not only is it like, oh, it's not like it's David and Waylon having a conversation. It's not like it's two characters. No. Medea is involved. Two other people are involved. And then it's like the son it's the daughter and the father situation that's unfolding all in the same, like, Uncle Joe, I guess it's just kind of like downstairs just hanging out in his blanket for whatever reason. I'm not sure if he's immobile or if he's just super lazy, one or the other. But
it seems
yeah,
like he's super lazy, honestly.
Yeah, and it's just
and
like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure, yes.
Yeah. He may be stoned.
And so that's kind of what's like unfolding in this film, where it's just like, okay, we're crazy, we're kooky. Oh my God, we're going to kind of bring family values into the center of this film. And that's what I thought a lot of the Medea films were kind of centralized around, was kind of these family values and things like that, mm-hmm. that it was kind of exploring. And I thought it was going to explore that more than a 2 or 3 minute sequence in the middle of this goofy ass film. But no, it explores it for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then it's like, nah, all right, done with that. Here we go. You know, so yeah, for 2 or 3 minutes, this film gets super serious. And for the rest of the 100-minute runtime, it's something else, man. It's something else.
Yeah, I don't even like, there's so much more to say, but I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Like, we've talked about this film in terms of its place in the Hollywood hierarchy and how it serves, you know, an audience and of people who honestly seem to want it. But like, there's so much that's not okay with it on a very basic filmmaking level that it becomes a mystery that you continuously like, and it seems to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like one of the first jokes is made at the expense of a guy who is playing a fraternity bro.
Horse? Yeah. Are you talking about
it's
horse?
It's not horse. It's the I'm the El Presidente of this fraternity, whatever that guy's name is.
Yeah.
And Tyler Perry looks him straight in the eyes and says, "Who are you calling Old Man River? You look like you're 67." And I'm like, "You cast him."
That's not actually Jonathan. That's the other guy next to Jonathan. Yeah. So it's not El Presidente that he actually says that to. But I understand what you're saying.
Who you cast that actor? Like, did you improvise that on the set because you were like, I cast a 50-year-old.
Sure.
I gotta make a point of it. It's just, it's so weird.
It's kind of interesting to look at some of these actors as well, just looking at their IMDb page, as you're saying, Brian, is that they are slathered in so much makeup that they are unrecognizable. Like, this is so in... there's a lot of scholarship around this, so I'm not going to try to wade into it. But, like, the way that this reverses, like, things that were minstrel stereotypes and things like that, like, there's something really, like, politically fascinating about a black director taking all of these ideas that were so toxic, you know, 100 years ago? Is that maybe right?
At least. I mean, Amos and Andy was on TV.
Okay. Yeah. No, like Amos and Andy and things like that. Like, this is like on a purely like semiotic level. Like, it's fascinating. Like, they are, as you're saying, like, and this relates to what you're saying about the self-awareness, is it is leaning into every aspect of artifice and like, it's like they might as well have the boom mic, like, you know, float into the frame because at many times it does seem like they are constantly just trying to, puncture any possibility of reality and reminding you that these are personas, which is like kind of unique and, weirdly unlike very many things in Hollywood. The only thing... You know, even something, as I said, like Mike Myers is someone where he's not really doing that. Like, even when he's doing that new gong show, like that is such an anachronism for him to, you know, be dressing up as this makeup Frankenstein. Like there is something, as you're saying, like, so stitched together, but like so knowingly stitched together about this that feels different and doesn't feel nearly as smug as something like Asylum or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not, you know, you say it's not as smug as Asylum. I mean, it's not. This is earnest fucking movie. And I mean, Yusuf Arakat, I guess. I don't know how to pronounce
his name. Yeah.
He's apparently a famous YouTuber.
Really?
I clicked on his name and that's
what
it said.
Wow, okay.
He's
all right.
Let me click on it again because I went back.
Vlogger.
Famous YouTuber with 9.2 million subscribers on his main channel.
Jesus
and over 3.1 on the vlogging channel, the other thing he has.
Douse of Fosse? Okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, I mean, like, you know, he got, you know, they pulled people who have talent and an audience.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so strange because, like, I guess, like, I don't watch YouTube like it's television, okay? Like, I don't understand following people. Like, when people are like,
sure,
this YouTube family has, like, 21 million subscribers, and then I click on it, and it's like, hey, we're here in the car, and, like, Elizabeth is, you know, gonna sing the Frozen song, and then it's, like, a little girl poorly singing Let It Go, and the mom and dad are just laughing. And then, like, they'll have, like, a more staged scene where it's like, whoa, this is Tim! And I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand. I am old. I turned 30 last weekend. This is nuts to me. But, like, maybe that's a style. Yeah. Like, maybe people are into that. Maybe I don't get it. And it's possible, but, like, to an outsider looking in at a movie that has, at its heart, a very dark story to tell... It's super weird the places that it goes, both in terms of tone and story.
Sure. Like, but jokes, like, about 17-year-olds, you mean?
Yeah. I mean,
Jesus.
Yeah. It's hard to even know, like, where to begin, cuz, like, you've got the old people who are talking about, like, oh, your daddy used to beat you so bad we had to take you to the hospital, and I'm like, "Whoa." That's real fucked up.
There's an insane story about a pencil and a certain private part. Like there are things like, but that's what's so weird is that darkness is mixed in with, like, that slapstick as if there's no difference between the two. Right, like, it's just like, oh, listen to those old people talk about beating, you know, a kid to a pulp. Like, it's so weird.
And then they try to, like, use a mix of both, like, the modern father who's, like, trying to be his daughter's friend and, like, the sheer insanity of these old people to, like, make a happy medium. But, like, the writing in that cathartic scene is so poor that I couldn't tell when the revelation had finally happened. And who was supposed to be revelated? That's not even a word, but that's where my brain is at. And it's just, bananas. Like,
I don't think I've ever seen an after-school special where someone is thrown on the street to make a point.
They're like, we're going to throw you on the street. You know, you don't respect your dad, you're a grown-up. And she's like, how can I respect you when mom didn't respect you? And he's like, whoa, you have to hold up. I guess spoilers, by the way. And then he's like, you knew that your mom was cheating on this house? And she's like, of course I did. And I'm like, okay, so now they're going to hug. But, like, no, the madness continues. And, like, people are still mad at each other. And even now, sitting here before you, I don't think I understand what the moral was.
So,
they go into a whole other prank.
Brian, okay. Bill Stardio.
Yes, Bill, please. Please go.
Okay. So
I need a break.
One of the small roles in this film is played by Bella Thorne. And I don't know if you've kind of followed her kind of trajectory, but she was kind of this Disney kind of character. She ended up in the Scream series where Scream MTV series where she played a character that's kind of a little risque, we'll say. And then, like, she is immediately off in, like, the pilot episode. And she is very much, according to her wiki, 19 at this point, more than likely about 17 when she was filming the series. Diamond White, who plays Tiffany in this series, very much 18 as of right now. So she was very much underage while she was filming this series. So the series is pointing out that these two women, or two of the women, are under 17. They're putting them in kind of risque outfits and then capitalizing on the fact that they are under 17 and, like, posing it as a creepiness factor when they are in fact 17 while they were making this film. And I don't understand what's going on in this series, because all of a sudden I'm like, okay, if we're going to point out that they're, you know, under 17 kind of in fictional reality, most of the time they're people like Lexi Alexander and Lexi Pantera. Sorry, I don't know where Alexander even came from, but Lexi Pantera.
That's the director of Warzone, isn't it?
yes, she is. And so more than likely they are older actresses that they're kind of playing down in age. But in this case, two of the actresses that they're like, oh, they're only 18 or 17. By the way, they're probably 17 actually while they were making this film, or even younger. That feels really fucking sketchy to me. And I just don't understand what Tyler Perry gets from, like, casting these young women and then, like, putting them in these outfits. Like,
the only director who's ever used age-appropriate actors for high schoolers.
And it feels even worse by doing that. And I'm just like, I don't understand why you're doing this. Like at least cast someone that's like 20 or 19 so I don't feel so bad when I look up the age of these actresses and I'm like, holy shit, they're actually 17.
Especially because,
like, that's,
like,
not okay.
The Yusuf Erekat, again, sorry if I mispronounced that, he was born in 1990.
Yeah.
So at the time that this movie was made, assuming it was
way older,
2015, it would be 25.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Not indeed, Michael.
Well, I guess the thing about it is there is obviously something very sketchy and creepy about, you know, the way that this kind of fetishizes those, you know, those women in the dress. Like, it's so obviously made that, like, you know, they are of loose moral character. Like, they might as well say that in the movie.
Yeah.
But, like,
skank alert, right? It's like,
oh yeah, shit. They say that.
If this were an after school special from, like, the 50s, they would have died at the end of this. That's the coding for
these women. You just see all of them in a squalid room with needles in their arms.
Yeah, oh, and then, like, the man in the suit would come in and be like, Rain and Leah were not godly women, and this is what ends in that path.
Yeah.
Oh, will your child succumb to the temptation of the devil's nectar weed? Anyway, sorry.
I guess that's the thing, is other than that, this is kind of trying to be wholesome, but there are also, like, I guess I alluded to it earlier, but there's a scene where a character is, like, literally hit with a hammer in the face. Like, there is, like, it's such an odd tonal disconnect between so many parts of this movie.
Yes, this film desperately wants to, in the middle of it, be a Three Stooges film.
Yeah.
You know what's weird?
Like all of the clown stuff that happens in this film, and that is not a spoiler, by the way. All of the clown stuff in the middle of this film, oh my god, it reeked of Three Stooges stuff.
Those clowns are creepy.
Yes, they were actually, like, legitimately creepy, and this film is like, no, they're not. It's just like, what? Okay, I guess not.
Like that opening, the opening scene where she first sees a clown at a cart. Like that was something out of Rob Zombie's Halloween. Like I'm pretty sure that's like an out. That's like an outtake or something.
This film, guys.
Like I said, man, it's super weird, and like there's just so much of it. Cause like I said, like so there's a very basic plot that they set up at first, and for it takes forever to get there.
Like, yes.
You have Can we just jump into explicit spoilers right now, guys?
Oh, I mean we're in spoilers. I mean this is this is happening. So what? I'm not even gonna put like my usual spoiler cut in timestamp on this because I literally don't know where it could be. But what I'll say is, so like the movie opens, like I said, with like these guys in this frat house. We're like, oh, we're the coolest frat on campus. We got some fly dancers. We got a guy who does like Hollywood style makeup effects. Keep an eye on him. He'll be important. And and then they're like, there's some girls outside. So they run up to the girls who one of whom is one of our many protagonists.
Which is the weirdest thing I can ever think of. There are women outside of your frat house, and all of a sudden the entire frat house shuts down and they're like, okay, let's go rush them and like talk to them. I'm like, what? You are on a college campus, more than likely. There are gonna be women outside of your frat house at some point. 24 hours a day, do you just completely shut down every single time that there is like, you know, a small gathering of at least four women at this point who are, oh, by the way, underage?
Yeah, but like, but so then it cuts to Medea, and after the dad comes and says you can't go to that party, and then the girl's like, I can do whatever the fuck I want, I'm not going to mom's house. So then it cuts to Medea, who also goes by Mabel, and Bam, Aunt Bam, and
Bam might be my favorite character. Honestly,
Aunt Bam is definitely someone else.
What do you mean?
I gotcha what you're saying. Okay, Medea and Aunt Bam. I thought you were saying that they were both the same.
No. Yeah. Aunt Bam is her own person, but I'm saying Medea goes by Mom, Medea, and Mabel. But anyway, so
Cassie Davis is Aunt Bam.
Are sitting there and they're like having a long conversation, and then Bam is stealing candy from children. And
way too long.
And that goes on for a while. And then this clown shows up.
And that goes on for a while.
And another clown jumps out, and then they hit that clown. And then it's like, oh, we know you. This is crazy. And then after this weird 10-minute long thing has happened, finally the plot reintroduces itself. And then they go to the house, and it's like 20 minutes. It's like in real time of them like working out a very simple plan, which is please watch my daughter so she doesn't go fuck a frat guy. And then the daughter's like, we're going to scare them. So they go to bed early to her friend. And the friend is like, all right, whatever. I'm a pushover. And so then you think that's going to be a thing, but it is over in a blink of an eye. And then they run away. Surprisingly, before anyone has gone to bed, they go to the party. The people follow them. Then they go back, they leave the party because the frat guys are like, you're 17, we could get in trouble, get out. And Medea and all of them are like, we're going to cause some havoc, and then we're going to leave because what else is there for us to do? So they go back to the house, and then the frat guys are like, we're going to prank those broads, and they do. And then Medea goes to a church where the good girl had already told her father what was up. And then, P.S., there have been zombies and clowns. And so then they're like, well, we got to get those guys back, but before we could do that, Brian has to come back home, have this weird sort of heart-to-heart with his daughter, which, again, I don't understand how that ended. And then they're like, we have to go. The cops say we have to go to the frat house. All the frat boys are like, man, this party fucking sucked. I can't believe it. And then one of them sees the dead girl in the basement. P.S. A day, the good girl is in the basement with what looks like a fresh throat cut wound. And they're like, oh, shit. And then the police come in, and the police are like, get him outside with handcuffs. We're going to put him in not a police car, but a bus filled with quote-unquote prisoners. They go in there.
Real awkward.
Then there's a lot of real fucked up, like, homosexual prison rape jokes.
Yep.
Directed at both men and women. And then after that happens.
And they can't quite... they can't quite help but prison or Orange is the New Black kind of like throw that in there with the woman with like the little like curly hair and like crazy eyes, and I'm just like, really? Really? Like, yeah, you just gotta throw that Walter. Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, so now we've got like a weird transphobic joke happening, maybe.
Yeah.
And then they're all out, and then everyone's laughing and hugging, and it's like, oh my god, Adair, don't do that to me again. And then it's pretty much over. And, but like the crazy thing is, again, like you would think that that emotional catharsis between father and daughter would be the end of the movie, but it keeps going on.
No. Yeah.
Also, that bus scene goes on, sorry, I know we finished it, but that bus scene goes on, like most of the movie, for a really long time. Like we are literally watching, like, kids, like, maybe college kids, but also like 17-year-old girls, like screaming in terror of people harassing them on this bus. Like it's really a really horrifying image that like really doesn't even feel like a joke, other than being, you know, like grossly sexist and homophobic. Like it's just a bizarre miscalculation. And there are a few scenes like that, but that one especially, I was like, I, even the goodwill I had towards this being a ridiculous movie, like that started to just dissipate with that last confrontation and then the bus. I was like, you know what? I kind of fucked this movie a little bit.
Yeah, this entire movie could very much be 45 minutes.
This whole I guarantee that this has to have been done as like a 23-minute sitcom once.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm looking and a Medea Christmas is 2 hours and 32 minutes.
Fuck that.
Wait, when did a Medea Christmas come out?
2011.
I don't care.
I'm seeing one in 2011 and then one in 2013.
Absolutely no. Absolutely no. There cannot be any reason for any of these films ever to elapse the 2 hour point.
Okay, but so
at all.
Here's the craziest part to me though, is that we find out that like there was apparently like a Tennessee Williams-esque affair going on.
I guess this series kind of folds in on Brian's kind of like actual life and stuff like that. And something tells me like that is not just thrown into this series in particular or just this movie in particular.
Which movie deals with that though?
I don't know. But okay. So here's one of the two things that I recently, by looking up online, this is the 9th film in the series. This is the second Medea film not adapted from a stage play. What?
So the stage play ones have to be the ones that are like a little more...
better?
sensible?
I hope. I don't know. Were they originally Medea films? Is that what they... Or guys, Medea's plays? Is that what
they're
they
also
were?
On the show as well.
What?
Medea is on the show. There is House of Pain, Meet the Browns,
and
Thy Neighbor.
No!
Which are all done by Tyler Perry. House of Pain, Medea shows up in guest appearances. Meet the Browns, she is mentioned. And Love Thy Neighbor, she made a guest appearance.
Meet the Browns is also a movie.
Yes, which she also shows up in.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, well...
There's also an animated film, too.
I feel like, you know, as confused and lost as I get in the Marvel films, like, this is right up there. Like, I feel like I need a Medea soothsayer to, like really bring this out. Because it feels like... Like
Brian, I don't even think we got your like overall arching thoughts of this.
We tried, but we kept getting sidetracked. I'll say this: there are hints in this movie of movies past that come off like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's like Madea's Halloween, Boo, I'm sorry, Boo, a Madea Halloween, feels in some way like the slapstick sidequel that Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf never got. It's like if you just like introduced some like aunt into that and it was like, oh, also we're going to have George show up at some point.
Like, and also you have their kid being like, stop being such a fucking doormat.
Yeah. Jesus. I just like, what is happening? What's happening in this? I just don't get it. Like, it just, it's so hard to like wrap my mind around. And there are things that happen that I've like, cause like early on in the movie, we're introduced to a guy whose special ability is like stationary running, flipping.
And then two of them,
the zombie chase scene, he is very prominent in the background. So I was like, is that a cue?
So much so that he actually passes a character and then continues to flip around them. And so I'm just like, wait.
My question was, like, is that there for anyone who might actually fear that Madea is being attacked by zombies?
No, but the thing is, like, there is actually supernatural stuff in here that the movie doesn't even acknowledge. Like, there's that whole mirror scene, which are we supposed to assume she was high? So that's why she was seeing words on the mirror?
They were hacked and somehow they managed to do that, because they also managed to explain away the fact that they were able to mess with the plumbing, which,
yeah, that's,
I mean,
right.
I guess if you figured that they could like attach some mechanical device underneath the sinks of all the sinks and then like be able to turn on the plumbing without the faucet handles actually turning, I guess that makes sense, but no, it does not make sense at any point.
Does not make sense, no.
I'll take a lot of bullshit to like,
yeah, real close approximation for what is it, hacking into a sorority place's web cameras versus being able to do that with plumbing
that thing you did with the webcams is probably illegal, but
and then one guy's like, you should do that again.
Yeah.
And everybody's like looks at him real funky, and the film's just like, haha, that's funny, right? And it's like, no, it's not, but okay, go on.
Guys, I mean, I kind of have like a philosophical question. Are we supposed to take either Madea, Joe, or Brian, any of their values or what they're saying at face value?
That is an excellent question, and I don't know. Usually a film such as this will have a character who has the moral authority to speak for the message of the movie. This movie does not have that. If anyone does, I think it's Adai. Because like even the Reverend, who I was like, oh god, the Reverend's gonna do something, but like,
sure.
No, even he gets like verbally slapped around and like doesn't seem to, I don't know. And Madea is like soundly on the side of beating your children, as is Joe, as is Hattie, as is Bam. And like
in not a funny like that was back then way, like a like it is so
strange.
Let's bring
that back.
Yeah, it's so strange because there is a way to like nod back to like traditionalist, you know, child rearing, but the way that this does it is so strange. Like, it's not a single joke. It is like the entirety of their philosophy.
At some point, Brian should say, like, I've been trying to be her friend. That's not going to work. But you know what else isn't going to work? Beating, because enough kids who got beat became violent themselves that we know it's not the right thing to do. And he should say, what I need to do is like take the concept of discipline and adapt it to the modern world we live in and then come up with something. But like, instead, a bunch of old women are raiding this girl's room and being like, you didn't buy any of this. Your father did. You need to respect him. And she's like, why should I? Mom didn't respect him. She fucked a guy in his house. And obviously she doesn't say that, but that's pretty much like she says, like, mom's
pretty much
verbatim.
Yeah.
And he's
it's
like,
almost worse how they word some of the things in here, because yeah. they have to, like, you know, smooth over dark material.
It would be hilarious if she had to use the term make love. Can you imagine if she had been like, Mom Jesus. Made love to another man in your own house? Like, that just is actually, that is yeah. a lot more cutting than
yeah,
fucked a
because,
dude in your house.
Yeah, because her brother is, like, in the scene or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that brother doesn't get checked ever again, by the way. Like, he just disappears. Yeah.
This is like that Patton Oswalt bit where he talks about being on animated shows and how they can't say anything bad. So they'll, like, you know, they'll make up swear words and it sounds so much grosser than anything you could ever possibly say.
No, I do think Ade is kind of the heart and soul of this film, because, like, it's weird because, like, her character is kind of forgotten halfway through. And yeah. then towards the middle of the film, they're like, oh, by the way, we don't know where Ade is. And we've already seen her safe and outside of the frat house, like, listening to their plan. And we're like,
sure.
Wait, like, we know she's safe.
Well, that's
so.
The crazy thing is that, like, you would think that this – you like, the effective way to do this movie – if you were trying to teach the audience a lesson, would be to, like, have us be fooled by a day's so-called murder.
Sure.
But it's
yeah.
not. So we're just sitting there, like, waiting for them to reveal it to these kids. And I don't know if it's supposed to make it funnier that we know, or, like, what. But, like,
it's a gnarly fake wound as well.
Well, yeah.
Like, they've got that one dude who's, like, the top of my Hollywood production special effects class.
Yeah.
And then they've got another dude who's top of the plumbing school. And the TV hack school's star pupil is also there. And then you've got the jumpers.
I just realized that the police advocate the scene at the end of the movie as well.
Oh, yeah,
like, the police are like, oh, yeah, this is a good way to teach a lesson.
Brian is a district attorney?
I guess so, yeah.
I thought he was
knows,
like a professor
he knows some
when he showed up. Because
yep.
I was like, why
yep.
else would he be living near this college?
I hope he's the same character in Gone Girl.
Oh, yeah. He, like, retires and becomes a defender. He's like, I could make a lot more money keeping the litter on the streets.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't know, man. This, like, we haven't even touched on a bunch of stuff. I will say, I laughed out loud once during this movie. I don't know if you guys got any actual laughs at this movie.
I got a few chuckles here and there, but...
So let me
really
let me ask
thought
if
Bam
anyone
was
else.
Pretty funny.
You thought what?
I thought Bam was decently funny. I thought she had the best.
Firmly disagree.
Of... All right.
I don't know. we'll get okay. So first of all, the only time I laughed was when they were in the church, and like Medea is like talking about like murderous revenge, and the Reverend's yeah. like, "But you've been saved," and she says, "You know, Reverend." Hey, sometimes saving is like a bad perm. It just doesn't take. And
when she changes the voice.
Yeah, she just suddenly is Tyler Perry's voice. And I don't know why. I guess because I just firmly wasn't expecting it. It caught me
sure.
off guard. And I was like, holy shit, that's awesome. Like, I don't think you could get away with doing that the whole movie. Because they did it a second time for something else
yeah.
and I didn't laugh. But like. That moment, I was like, all right, good delivery. You landed that one. I'll give it to you. But no,
I also like when Bam is stealing candy from the
yeah.
trick-or-treaters. That actually got me, because the first time I noticed it, they don't
sure.
really kind of like call it out. And the second time they do it, then they kind of – like Medea calls it out. And then the third time they do it – the kid calls it out and you're just
yeah.
like, oh, okay. So this is kind of building on itself. And they keep
yeah.
doing that three time kind of structure over and over and over again. And by like the second or third time, you're like, okay, I understand what's going on here. Like, y'all do not have to do this three times over again. So.
Guys, our listeners are going to think that they should go see this movie, and that's not
say
the
right
case.
No, 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 no. Do not do that. You know, sometimes we talk about a movie and we're like, it's so crazy, you have to see it. Like The Lure. The Lure
sure.
was like, what the hell is going on? But you got to see it. This is, we took a bullet for you, assholes. And
this is the second highest grossing film of the Madea series.
Wow. I think $73 million.
Perfect way to end this, honestly. I will say that, like, I would be at pains to try to rank characters from, like, favorite to least favorite in this movie.
Guys, hold on. Okay, so we've talked on this podcast endlessly about how the outside of the North American market, like, a lot of these films make all of their kind of box office and everything like that. Yeah. This film made $73.2 million in North America and $1.6 million in other territories worldwide.
It's interesting.
That's a real domestic hit.
No, that is an utter an absolute failure overseas, which is scary. Because why?
Because did they release it much overseas?
I don't know, but I mean, oh my gosh, the Transformers films make like $700 million overseas,
but like,
and this film made 1.6. I understand, but that's just such a poor reflection of, like, what the overseas market is, like, available to, and, like, what
this
will
consume. Co-produced with a Hong Kong distributor as well. You see it at the beginning.
This is a Lionsgate film. Like, man, that really, like, there's not much that, like, hurts my heart about, like, the Hollywood system, but the fact that this film made 1.6, like, you're right, Brian, to question, like, okay, how much did they kind of release it overseas? But even if they had, like, a moderate release, the fact that it made $1.6 million overseas is so bad. That is so bad. That is so bad.
I guess the other thing to say here is, like, along with what you're saying, Bill, like, we talked a lot about how this, you know, it definitely impacted domestically, like, a large minority audience is feeling like they are being catered to, which is great. But, like, I have to say, after seeing this movie, it's really frustrating. And I'm feeling a little bit like, you know, some of this audience is being conned. And I guess I can't say that until I see the other movies and see how they work with each other. But just, like, I was just kind of flabbergasted at the laziness of this at times. And it's...
Yeah. And like I mentioned, like, from the outset, this film feels very cheap. Like, it really does. And it's got nothing to do with, like, it's like overall narrative or anything like that. Like, just the filmmaking quality of it. There are times right in the middle of this film where you just, like, you feel like you're watching a student film or something like that. There's so many single angle shots of people talking where it's so obvious that the other character is not reacting to what's actually happening on screen. And then every now and then you'll get, like, a glorious two shot where they'll actually, like, interact with each other. And you're just like, oh my
two shot.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God, this is a movie. Like, this is an actual movie.
It's not even that. It's like the lighting, like the cinematography, the to deploy some French on you, the mise en scène. I mean, it's like nothing like this is like, okay, we know how churches are now funding movie productions, right? Like The War Room and Fireproof. But this is like if a single church made a movie. Not the Protestant church or like some evangelical group, like Pure Flix type of thing. This is like if a church by itself.
The big church on the highway as you pass into town.
Oh no, like, Bill, you're from Texas. I mean, like, I think a mega church could do better than this. Like, I think smaller church in a suburb out of the way, like 2 hours from a major city, got together and said, let's make a movie. And this is it. Like, literally feels like they just, like, sat the camera down. Like, and again, aesthetically, I don't know if it's similar to other movies. Like, maybe this was a lark. Maybe it was like, sure, you know what, we could knock one of these out. I could get $20 million to do this. But it's so weird. Like, it's so weird. I can't even... It's hard to really put into words.
Like, speaking specifically of a specific shot, I think of that scene, like... I feel like there has to be at least 20 minutes of this movie that takes place in that foyer, in Brian's house. Yes. Like, just where they're the couch.
Yeah, that sitting room. Oh, my gosh.
Like, of them just then, like, freaking out at each other and, like, riffing back and forth. Like, it's kind of unbelievable.
even like the sequence with like Brian talking to them, which I guess had to be like a little bit of a green screen kind of situation where I guess the background was completely green screen and then they like piece Brian into there, because I mean there are sequences where Medea and Brian are in the same sequence and I was just like, ugh, like this feels really awkward.
The fire that they made in the fireplace just looked incredibly
I wasn't even looking when they were talking about the fire, and then I looked back over and I was just like, what is going on? What are they even talking about right now?
They're like, ooh, a wood burning fire, and I was like, no. There is not a fire in that fireplace in reality.
You know, the funny thing is that like they show this absolutely beautiful home and they do a whole lot of nothing really with it. Like it is a beautiful looking home from the outside.
Bill, you want to know the reason why they probably didn't do anything with it?
Because they didn't shoot inside that home.
Oh no, because I was gonna say, because they shot inside that home, like, oh, okay, they probably didn't have flyaway walls or like breakaway ceilings or anything, so they just had to be like, camera guy in the corner, we're doing a shot reverse shot, we can't glide through this home because it's a real home.
Like, yeah.
There's that weird scene where you find out that one of the characters is in a bedroom we never knew about. And it becomes a thing where she's like, I'm going to go in a different bedroom. And it's not like any previous part of the movie they had a conversation about going to sleep in different rooms or anything.
Nope.
It's just we're happening to show you this. Like,
I mean, I would also say, like, there's a point where two characters are like, the two girls are like, we're going to sneak down the back stairs.
Yeah. And you're like, what is the back stairs?
Okay, so they're sneaking down the back stairs. And then you see Medea in a hallway. And I'm like, oh, they're going to do like a slapsticky kind of Scooby-Doo thing where they're, nope, they've already left, they're gone. And then she runs downstairs and she's like, those broads snuck out. And I was like, everyone is still awake? Your entire purpose in doing that ruse where you said the house was haunted was to get them to go to bed early, and then you snuck out before you were even sure they were in bed.
Yep.
Why did you have to have that sequence of nonsense at all? Except to set up when the guys are pranking, because you conveniently told a dude everything that you told them so that they would be able to perfectly recreate it. Also, how long was this night?
Yeah, this night was real long. By the way, I'm not sure if y'all know how electricity works, but there's definitely not a remote control that can like cut electricity to the lighting system like intermittently like that, and then just like automatically like turn it back on. Like, that's not quite how electricity works.
I can
unless you have some kind of like complicated flicker system built into the house as a whole, that
what the practical usage of that be?
I can understand if you had a panic button type of thing that would turn on all the lights in your house automatically, you know? That makes sense to me.
But off.
But you wouldn't make it so that it would turn all of them off. You would make it because, like, you hear a smash down in your kitchen, right? And you wake up and it's the middle of the night and you're like, oh my God. And you don't want to have to, like, Mulder and Scully it with a flashlight and flip on light. You hit the panic button, all the lights turn on, nowhere for the robber to hide, right? They're going to run.
Yeah.
But why would you then have a same thing that would turn it off? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it was an absurd creation.
And flicker.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. What else? Is there anything else we should say about this movie? We've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes.
I don't know. The fact that we even started with Lexi Pantera just says everything about this entire fucking movie.
Again,
like,
I had to.
Yeah, I had to too, because I was like, who is this woman that I've never seen before who has a nose ring and then apparently can twerk like a monster? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, she's a professional like dancer. Like, interesting that you just folded her into this narrative film series. I was like, oh, thanks, Tyler Perry.
Right, like, and I was really? Like, expecting, like, she's a Disney star. And then I like, the first thing that I knew about this woman as a human being outside of this movie is the car in which she was conceived. That is, I don't even know where my wife was conceived, but I know where Lexi Pantera was conceived. Do you know how awkward that is? Do you know how little I want that?
Hold on. Why is her last name with two R's instead of one?
Copyright?
Like, isn't... Is it, I guess, but like, who is Pantera going to be like, you can't use our name? Is Pantera an actual name that's copyrighted? Like, it's a band name.
It's possible.
But not a human name.
So here's another great bio. Brock O'Hearn, who plays Horse.
Can they please be like a couple?
This is like the opposite side of the spectrum. This is his entire biography on IMDb. Brock O'Hearn is an actor known for Boo, A Madea Halloween, Too Close to Home, and Boo 2, A Madea Halloween.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, that's the opposite end of the same depressing spectrum.
Guys, Too Close to Home looks crazy.
I don't even know what it is.
That's another Tyler Perry show.
Oh, my God.
Hopefully he does get some like roles as Chris Hemsworth, like body double in the Thor series. Like, please.
All right. I feel like we got to wrap this up. But my last thing is, do we have any speculation? What the hell is Boo 2 about?
I don't know, because I went and we don't have a plot description yet. And the other crazy thing is,
because, like, it's not based on a play. Obviously,
it could go
Bella
anywhere.
Thorne isn't back.
Now, Bella Thorne is not back, but Lexi Pantera is.
So she's got to dance. So is Tyga back?
Oh, I don't know. That's an excellent
question. No, but Yusef is.
Yusef is back. So the frat bros will be back. It looks as though Diamond White, who played Tiffany, will be back. Obviously, I'm assuming Tyler Perry is going to be back. So maybe, oh my God, can I fan cast what the next movie is going to be?
Yes.
Okay.
Please do this.
So we know that Bella Thorne
is
not
best
in
thing
it.
That's happened.
So Bella Thorne is not in it. So what I want is for the movie to open at her funeral. She has been murdered, and Tiffany wants revenge, and the frat bros are being framed. So they're racing to discover the true killer, while Tiffany gets Madea, Joe, Aunt Bam, and Haiti to come and help her take down the frat bros. So it's like the frat bros are the Jason Bourne to those people's, all the other Treadstone agents, and they're trying to find the real killers of Rain. And Lexi Pantera is somewhere in the back dancing.
You know, that's totally plausible.
I was like, when is Lexi come into play? And then you just rolled that into it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Lexi could be like crying at the funeral and then tell Tiffany, like, when I last spoke to Rain, she was really upset. She said she had some information that was going to blow this whole thing open.
And we were dancing at a club. And then it shows like Lexi dancing in the background. Yep.
Yeah.
There we go. Boom.
Perfect. Done. Tyler Perry, call us. Oh, man, I didn't check to see if Adele would be back in Boo 2. It does not look like she will. So apparently she's had enough of this nonsense.
And now for the second part of our program.
Yeah, who's still got the energy to talk about Patterson? Like, can I call an audible and say that should just record Patterson, like, midweek?
We can do that. Are we going to release this then? This is supersized.
We'll just release this as it is. And then, like, we can do Patterson, like, on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Have you guys already watched it?
I have, yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah,
Bill, are you okay with that? I don't want to, like, you know. It's 9:30. Yes. Mike and I are both sick. I mean, I just... We should... So is everyone, show of hands, is cool with us doing Patterson another day?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
The eyes have it. Ladies and gentlemen.
There's another 2017 Tyler Perry movie, Madea on the Run. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. Madea's on the run from the law with no place to turn. She moves in with her friend Bam, who is recovering from surgery and has no idea what is going on.
Oh, my God. Is that hip surgery that Bam kept talking about? She finally get that? Is this a prequel to Boo? Is Madea... Boo the Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift of the Madea universe?
Oh my God. That is a play. That is a play. It was touring in 2015.
Wait, that's a play?
Yes. Oh my God.
But Bill, are you looking at this amazing picture as I am then?
No. I don't know where you're at. What's going on right now?
It's so dark.
I don't know what I clicked on, but oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, Bill, we've lost Bill. He is now seriously downloading the PDF play scripts for all of the Madea films and plays. Let's so I know we opened this up by saying that we would be doing Patterson too. Part of me, I'm going to write this. I feel like I'm going to write this up and I'm going to have the episode title say Boo, Madea, Halloween, and Patterson. Just so that people have to live in this podcast the same way that we had to live going through it.
And they'll be like, when the fuck are they going to talk about Patterson?
I will put in no time stamps and just like be like, yeah, we're going to talk Patterson at some point. Just hang in there.
Poor souls. Those poor souls.
This is their punishment for making us watch this fucking movie.
Okay, so we'll... To anyone who's still listening, we will record Patterson later this week. It's an interesting movie, and I do want to talk about it. I did not expect us to talk for an hour and 20 minutes. I fully intended that Madea would go at least 45 minutes before we would say enough. But we got pulled into it. So...
That is why Lexi Pantera's name is... with two R's, because apparently her father's name is Tony Pantera with two R's.
But did he choose it?
I don't know.
All right, well, now we got to figure out Tony Pantera's backstory.
Ah, oh, Jesus.
I'm going to Google him right now. His name is Tony Pantera. And
it's got to be Tony DiStefano, the motocross racer. That has to be him. Oh, Jesus.
Anyway.
I've gone down a deep, dark hole, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it. Anyway, I'm done. We gotta stop this. We, for the love of Christ, we have to stop.
Guys, Tyler Perry has wrote more things than... He has so many credits. I can't do this.
This is the episode that involves the most... shocked babbling and sudden sentence cutoffs of our entire career. So that's our review of Boo, a Madea Halloween. Join us later in the week when we will be giving a full episode to Patterson. I apologize. I don't have music queued up for the end because I thought we were going to be talking about Patterson, so the song I chose relates to Patterson. I'm going to leave it. It's going to play. So
wait, we're doing Madea on the Run this week too, right?
Oh my God, of course. So join us next week when we talk about Patterson. In the meantime, if you'd like to see some other great movies, you can join Mubi. Mubi's got some good stuff on it. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage and you will have free 30-day access to Mubi, the streaming online cinema, where you get a great rotating selection of films. That means that, you know, if you were to sign up today, the movie that you got today, you would be there throughout its entire lifespan. So you can see it for 30 days. And then I had just thought about this the other day. If you sign up for the 30-day trial, like, every movie that gets put on becomes suddenly, like, more immediate. So, like, the last day, if a movie that you see comes on and you're like, oh, no, you're going to have to actually get movie, which I fully suggest. I've had it for, like, 4 years now, and it is fantastic. They've got a great Roku app. And like I said, you can download the movies directly to your mobile phone and your tablet. So go to mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial and enjoy. So guys, we're done. Let's
bye. And now play the music and let's get out of here.
You just don't even want to say where we can be found between now. Oh my God. All right. Bill Graham, where can we find you?
Can't. Don't,
Bill,
don't.
Bill refuses to be found. Snidell?
Don't look me down.
You can find me on Snidell at Twitter, where I will be speculating about the life story of Lexi Pantera.
I will be working on my spec script, a biopic about Lexi Pantera. You can find me giving updates about that on Twitter. The first scene will indeed be her conception in the back of a 69 Cutlass. Oh my Christ.
Oh boy.
Anyway, yeah, Brian J. Rowan for all of my social media stuff, dearfilm.net and thefilmstage.com. Like I said, join us later on in the week when we will be talking about Patterson. Everybody's lying there, as bad as she. Another man named Bella moving around mysteriously. I didn't do it, he says, and he holds up his hands. I was only wrong with the register, I hope you understand. I saw him leaving, he says, and he stops. But one of us had better call up the cops. And so Patty calls the cops. You know, it's fitting that Medea's the one that broke us.